to episode 13 of Poet Voice. So on today's episode, I want to talk about the Lists and Litanies workshop that I did for the Ampersand Review writing series. And I also want to talk about this class I've been taking called Deep Listening, which has been really useful to my poetic practice. So to begin with, I think the Ampersand Review workshop was a lot of fun. I had a really great time. Thank you to everyone who participated in the workshop, who showed up, and who tried out some of the prompts that I had. I wanted to talk a little bit about my rationale for the workshop. So basically, it was on list poems and, for the purpose of alliteration, litanies, even though we didn't look at any actual litanies, but more like repetition poems or poems that use anaphora or a refrain, sort of repeating the same unit of language again and again to see what comes out of it. And both of these forms, like the list poem and the anaphora poem or repeating poem, are both really fun and generative ways to write poetry. I've used these forms in previous workshops, and I feel like they lower the stakes a little in terms of what a poem needs to be and sort of taking that pressure off, that it can be really exciting to acknowledge that a poem can be a list. It can be a grocery list. A poem can be a list that you wrote on your phone. Every line in a poem can begin with the same phrase, right? In terms of some of the poems that we looked at, you can sort of use this repeating phrase or refrain to tease out more layers to the poem and sort of add complexity to the poem. But at the very least, a poem can be whatever you want it to be. It can be a scrap of text. It can also be the villanelle that you've labored over for weeks, or the sestina that's taken you like months to work on. But it can also be something as simple as a list of things that make you think of the color red. Any of these things can be a poem. So I like these forms that are a little more playful and sort of allow you to have fun with poetry. The funny thing about these forms, I will say, is that I don't actually write a lot of anaphora poems or list poems myself. I was trying to think of ways that I have, and I think I do in like a subtle way, like I'll repeat the same phrase for emphasis, I'll do something of that nature. I have written some list poems that are maybe in an upcoming project. I do have one in my book, Drolleries, but outside of that, I haven't actually written a lot of poems that fall into these categories. But I will say that one of the first poems I ever wrote was a mixture of both. So the first sort of poetry workshop that I took was at the Sage Hill Writing Experience, which is in Saskatchewan. They still have this amazing workshop. Anyone can apply. It's now a mixture of online and in person. So I think if you apply to the Emerging Poetry Workshop, it's actually online. But when I went, it was in person. It was about 10 days in this little monastery, former monastery outside Regina, Saskatchewan, where I'm from. And it was just a really incredible experience. At that point, I thought of myself as a fiction writer first, actually. So at that point, I didn't actually think of myself as a poet. I was a little afraid of poetry. I had written my share of terrible teenage angsty poetry, but I didn't really know how to write poems that excited me or made me think about language in a new way. So in that workshop, the poet Susan Stenson, one of her prompts was she gave us a list of words. So she used something called a flip dictionary, which is sort of like a reverse dictionary. So instead of giving you what a word means, it gives you like lists of words, like tons and tons of different lists. And she had used these lists to compose some poems of her own. And the list that I was given, she sort of had a pile of them, was a list of musical instruments. And many instruments I had never heard of that had fun and sort of wacky names. the tam-tam. I remember being one of the instruments. So I used that list, and the prompt was to combine it with a refrain or anaphora. So the refrain that I was given was blank me. So saxophone me, flute me, tam-tam me. And of course, there's a little bit of playfulness there. I sort of heightened the sort of double entendre of that line. It was a little provocative, but it was also really fun to write this poem. And it was a list poem. It was so simple. It came together so quickly. And, you know, that poem does not appear in any of my books. I think it was published in like a chapbook that someone posted on Tumblr at one point. But, you know, the poem is not really something that I look back at often, but what it did was open up my mind in terms of what a poem can be. That a poem doesn't have to be something totally complicated and formally, technically advanced. It certainly can be, and those are some of the poems that I love the most, but it can also be really simple and elegant and playful and fun and provocative and all those things. So that's where my love of poetry kind of began, was an exercise that uses both anaphora or a refrain as well as a list of musical instruments. I think the other reason that I love repetition in poetry, and I love anaphora, litanies, any sort of poem that repeats parts of itself, is in terms of musicality. So while I don't write using a lot of anaphora or repetition of phrases myself, I do use a lot of repeated musicality in terms of assonance or alliteration. A lot of my poems are filled with sort of near rhyme, even like an end rhyme is a form of repetition. And times that I have used anaphora, as well as when I use rhyme, I feel that it really helps me to tap into the subconscious. So one of the most exciting parts of writing poetry is surprising myself, is writing something or coming up with an image or the poem taking a direction that I in no way anticipated. Even if I think I know what I want to write a poem about, like if I want to write a poem about snails, for example, or a particular tree or a memory from childhood, I think the most exciting thing is when the poem surprises you and takes you to a different direction. And one of the ways that you can access the subconscious is through the use of repetition, refrain, sort of repeating a component of a sentence, the beginning of a sentence, and sort of exploring all possibilities. And one thing that I said in the workshop is that if at any point, if you are writing a list poem or a repeating poem, and you find yourself growing bored of the pattern and wanting to take the poem in a new direction, I think that you should give yourself the freedom to do so. So this even happened in the workshop. Like someone said, you know, I started off doing the prompt, but then I ended up writing this other thing. And I actually love that more than anything, because the prompt is just to get you writing. So the other type of poem that we looked at were list poems. And list poems are also really fun. Again, it's not a type of poem that I find myself writing often, but I really love reading list poems in other people's books when I encounter them. Mainly the list poems that we looked at were The Pillow Book by Sai Shonagon, the 10th century Japanese courtesan or court lady to the empress, as well as the 2016 sort of revival of that form by Suzanne Buffum. Suzanne talks about the fact that her list poems, her pillow book, was born out of sort of this fitful sleep and insomnia. She's a parent, so sort of as a parent of young children, sometimes a list poem, a very short set of observations, a list that you've compiled, maybe even just in your head or on your phone as you go about the day, maybe that's the only kind of poem you have time for, is this list poem. So I find that to be really important to think about, that we need to also expand our idea of what a poem can be depending on sort of what's going on in our lives. You know, you have all these other responsibilities. If you have time to write down a few words on a page and find connections between ideas or observe things as you go about your day in the world, that can be a poem too. The other thing I want to talk about is this deep listening class that I'm currently taking. So it's Deep Listening Intensive 1, and it's held over Zoom through the Center for Deep Listening, which is in New York State. And the course takes place over, I think it's 3 months, a little more than 3 months, maybe 4 months, because we have 4 weeks devoted to deep listening, 4 weeks devoted to movement, and 4 weeks devoted to dreaming, and there's a week break in between each of the modules. So deep listening, for those who are not familiar, is a term coined by experimental composer Pauline Olivaros, who passed away in 2016. And Olivaros was an accordion player. She was sort of this experimental composer, and she held these deep listening retreats. We learned that they sort of came into being in 1988 after Olivaros descended 14 feet into the Dan Harpole underground cistern in Port Townsend, Washington, to make a recording. And she coined the term deep listening as sort of a pun of her descending deeply into the cistern to record what she heard. From that pun, it's sort of taken on a life of its own, and it's blossomed into, quote, an aesthetic based upon principles of improvisation, electronic music, ritual, teaching, and meditation. So the reason that I wanted to take this class is that I thought it might be helpful to my poetic practice, especially in terms of my use of musicality, repetition, and sort of the things that I've already been talking about today. And it has been hugely helpful, but not in the way that I imagined or expected. I thought that I would feel most attuned to the listening module, which was the first module, and it has been really useful. As a poet, it's really helpful to use some of these deep listening practices to sort of attune myself to parts of nature that might be ignored in day-to-day life, as well as sort of allowing myself to, or opening myself up to, some very quiet sounds in the world, sounds that might go ignored. I think as a poet, it's important to observe the world as closely as you can, and deep listening is a way that I can train myself to be even more sort of attuned to the world around me, to observe more openly, and also to sort of acknowledge my own body and presence in these observations. So that's sort of what I expected would happen and is what I did discover in the first module. I was then surprised that I was so taken by the second module, which is the movement module. And in particular, the idea of movement scores was really inspiring to me, and I got really excited thinking about movement scores and text scores, which I hadn't encountered before. So basically, a movement score is a set of instructions for movement that anyone can do upon reading the instructions. I found these to be full of poetic possibility, especially in their use of figurative language. So most of them revolve around one central, like, image, metaphor, conceit. I'll read one movement score by Pauline Olivaros. So her score is as follows. Take a walk at night. Walk so silently that the bottoms of your feet become ears. And that's it. That's the movement score. It's two sentences. It's very simple. It's instructing you to walk at night and to walk so silently that the bottoms of your feet become ears. I find that incredible as an image. It's amazing. In class, we did an extreme slow walk, which is basically walking as slowly as you can. And the instructor asked us to imagine that our toes had little mouths on them that were gripping the floor beneath us. I love this image so much. It opened up so much possibility for me in terms of what language can do, what text can do. Anyone reading it can practice the score either for listening, for movement. Some encourage you to make a sound or respond verbally or simply to listen and be in the environment. There's such a range and there's not really any rules, but I found that the really successful ones did involve like a metaphor or a simile or figurative language in some way, hence the connection to poetry. I was really inspired by this idea of a text score because to me, they just seem like incredible prompts for writing poetry, if not miniature poems themselves. Like these movement scores seem like conceptual poems. And I came across this book called A Year of Deep Listening that just came out. And basically, it's 365 text scores inspired by Paulina Liveros, written after her, written in response to some of her other exercises that she's designed. And I've just been having an incredible time flipping through it. And to bring it all back to the workshop, I shared one text score called Chroma in the workshop. And it was really useful doing this exercise with everyone, as well as hearing your responses. So I wanted to share it now because I think it does work as a poetry prompt. It's called Chroma, and it's written by Elizabeth McNutt. Think of a color. Does the color have a scent? Inhale the scent deeply. As you focus on the color and its scent, what sound do you hear? Listen intently. Hear the sounds outside you. Hear the sounds inside you. Join those sounds by making your own sound. Repeat as many times as you like. And no one in the workshop sort of shared a sound, but they did share a word after when I asked for volunteers. And I found that to be really useful. And I think even completing this prompt would definitely put you in the mindset of for writing a poem, particularly if you're writing like a nature-inspired poem or just a poem reflecting on a particular color, like the one we read by Mary Hsu, Read by Other Names. So I want to share a couple others from A Year of Deep Listening. This next text score is pretty terrifying to me, but it's something that I do want to try to practice. It's written by Lisa Schoenberg, and it's called House Centipedes, and in parentheses, Are Not Out to Get You. The next time you see a house centipede in your house, stop and take a breath while noticing it. Take another deep breath while watching where it goes. What is the centipede possibly sensing? Who might hear it when it stridulates? What surfaces in your home might best carry its stridulations? What are its favorite parts of your shared home? Allow yourself forgiveness for any house centipedes you might have smashed. Acknowledge that they rarely sting, have trouble penetrating skin. Successful stings are mild, and allergic reactions are very rare. Let your housemate go on its way. So that's the house centipede text score, which is sort of encouraging empathy for the house centipede, which I do admit is something I struggle with. They really just give me a sense of terror, a feeling of revulsion and terror. But I think it's worth interrogating why that is and how deep listening, you know, might encourage me to look at the house centipede in new ways, to listen very closely to its stridulations. I'm not sure if I said that word correctly. And to, you know, because that's also what poetry asks us to do. Write a poem from the perspective of the house centipede, right? Write a poem for the house centipede, an ode for the house centipede. And then I wanted to share this text score called Sound Exercise 3, Imaginary Ears by Motohide Taguchi. Listen to the sounds around you. Start with those very close to you, and then try to listen to sounds from further and further away. Continue doing this until you reach the furthest sound that you can hear. Then imagine the sounds beyond your hearing limit and listen to them with your imaginary ears. So I think as poets, like this exercise of listening to a sound as far away as you can is really incredible. So I really love these text scores. I think they can work as writing prompts, but also just as exercises for honing your listening, honing your imagination. They're sort of like little thought experiments or maybe poetic experiments. I'm really enjoying A Year of Deep Listening, and I would recommend it to anyone who wants to sort of expand their sense of listening or their relationship to sound and poetry. So thanks to everyone who came out to the Ampersand Review workshop. I really had a great time, and thanks for letting me share a little bit about deep listening as well.